Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here, Money, Riches, and Wealth. It's Wednesday night, and Christopher John O'Shea is with me tonight. Christopher?
Mr. Tignanelli, great to be with you. We've braved the blizzard.
The blizzard of 2015. We made it through. You know, a couple weeks ago, it was perfectly normal. I left it about, 35, 40 minutes before the show, and it took me 50 minutes to get here. You know, today I decided, let's leave a little early. You never know. I left 50 minutes, and I got here in like 15.
Where was everybody? Where did everybody go?
Schools let out early. So okay. Everybody left to get their little kiddies and stuff, I guess, because there was nobody out there. Nobody.
They didn't go to the inauguration, that the gubernatorial.
Maybe went to, went to the State of the Union address, and they're still sleeping. Because that was a snoozer if I've ever heard one.
I didn't listen.
I didn't listen either.
Yeah,
but I'm just assuming it was a snoozer.
Sure.
Because there were politicians involved, so you know that it was a snoozer.
There's a lot to be said.
Unfortunately.
About that.
Unfortunately for them, I don't know how they go to bed at night.
Well, as I've said, I'm glad I'm glad I'm not one, because it's a tough job.
Yeah,
How do you keep your sanity, in a job doing that kind of job?
But it could be so great. If you sat down and you said, look, you guys have ideas, we have ideas, let's come together, let's look at our differences, let's put them together, let's see where we can come and compromise, and you have good ideas, I have good ideas, there's nothing wrong with some of the principles that the liberals want to exercise, with health care for all and, education and, all these different things, taking care. These are all good things. It's just, how do you get there, And so if you just hammer out, okay, I'm concerned about this, you're concerned about that, this is a good issue to pursue. How do we do it without creating a nanny society, That's really what we want to get to. And
it's hard. I can do that. I've not talked about it before, but having run for office, 20 years ago, I know that when you get in there and you start meeting constituents, there's this natural tendency to want to please the people you're talking with. You want to get along with them. You want to understand where their plight, where they're coming from. And so you start to be pulled, versus here's who we are, because it's always about getting elected. That's the number one concern of a politician in the end, is because they don't feel I can really do anything unless I get elected. So to get elected, you do things that all of a sudden now you don't set out a clear agenda. That's why I just love it. I don't care if you are to the right or to the left. Tell us what you think. Tell us what you believe. And let the chips fall where they may. You get elected, fine. If you don't, well, then that's fine, too. But that's not how it works.
Yeah, I understand. So anyway, we're on an open show, Christopho. And an open show means that our listeners are our guests. And so they get to call in. They get to determine the agenda for our show. They get to say, I want to hear about IRAs. I want to hear about 401ks. I want to hear about company benefits. I want to hear about life insurance. I have an issue in my life, and so they get to determine those.
Yeah, especially
those topics.
Especially at the start of a new year, there's so many things that can change. Company benefits, just the change of the year, whatever it is, the calendar changes. There's a lot of things that come up. People get to relook at their situation.
Yeah, so our phone number tonight is 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680 if you want to call in and ask a question. And again, it can be on any topic that deals with personal finances. This is FAFSA top filing time, college planning, 529s, American Opportunity Credit, all that kind of good stuff. This is a great opportunity. Let's address that topic with a Drew's view in this regard. Before I do, let me just say again, it's an open show tonight. You get to determine what we're going to talk about. So if you call in and ask your question, now's the best time, 410-922-6680, because people call in now get the most attention, because we just don't, there's no one on the line right this second. So if somebody calls in, they get all the attention. But then again, there was nobody out there on the Beltway, so there may be no one listening except for Noah. You know that?
We're not too sure about Noah.
No, he's not even listening, you know? Anyway.
He can do it in his sleep. He can do
here's a Drew's view, okay? So let's say you're a business owner. And let's say you're 50, 55 years old, and you've got three children, and two of them are going to college soon, okay? And you're a business owner, and your business is doing very well, and you're making $500,000 a year, $200,000, you know, whatever, $200,000, or you're making $150,000 and your wife's making $75,000. You know, and the point is you're making more than $160,000 a year. So therefore, when you file your income tax return, and your children are going to college, and you're pumping out a good $25,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year for your children to go to college, you're not getting that candy land of $2,500 of cash that the everybody else is getting, that their kids are going to college. So, you know, another guy's family, they make $150,000 and you make $190,000, and the $150,000, they've got two kids going to college, they get $5,000 of tax credits, and you get nothing. You get nothing. It's zero. Yeah. And but, you know, there is an answer if you can do it. Okay, so what we do is, the law is very specific, and the law says that there are only two people that can take the American Opportunity Credit. One is the person that claims them as a dependent on their tax return. So that would be like the parents.
Right.
The parents would claim them as a dependent on the tax return. And so regardless how the tuition got paid, the parent would be entitled to the American Opportunity Credit, but only if they have adjusted gross income under $160,000. And that's a phase out up to $180,000 and so forth. Okay. So my example is a business owner, and they're making $300,000 a year. So I want to get the American Opportunity Credit. So here's what I do. I hire the two children in my business, and I pay them, and literally I could pay them up to $25,000 to $30,000 a year, literally income tax free. Now I may have to pay FICA taxes, which is going to cost me 15.2%, you know, minus the deduction, it might end up costing me only 12.3% or something of that sort after the income tax deduction. But still, I got to put that out. And right. You might not have paid that yourself. But now all of a sudden I get the American Opportunity Credit, because I can now let the children take their own exemption on their own tax return, take their own American Opportunity Credit, and pay the children like $30,000 a year each, and wipe out the total income tax liability on that for federal purpose. Might owe state a little bit of money. All in all, I'm going to probably save something in the neighborhood of 15% to 25% on that $30,000. You're talking $5,000-$10,000 per child in tax savings with a strategy like that. We do it all the time. It's a great strategy. But let's say you're not a business owner. Let's say you just, you know, the average Joe working for a company, you've got investments and so forth. How do you do it if you have that type of situation?
Right.
Now the child won't be able to claim their own exemption. And I'm going to tell you how we'll do that after we come back from a pause. But anyway, we've got to remind our listeners, we're on a open show tonight. Nobody's on the line, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask your question, but if you don't, I'm going to finish and explain to you, how do you get the American Opportunity Credit if you're not a business owner? Right now, I got to go to Nick Rehack in traffic. Take it away, Nick. And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth, and we're going to go to our lines because we have lots of different callers calling in. But I promised to answer that second part of American Opportunity Credit,
sure.
So hang in there and
yep,
I'll answer that question. Right now we're going to Larry in Pikesville. Larry, how can we help you?
Hey, how are you? My boss is paying for my health insurance, but he told me that now it's not deductible for him. So my accountant had told me that I have to pay, if he pays me directly and then I pay my insurance, I have to pay taxes on that. Is that correct? And if that is so...
Well, let me ask you a question. Is he only paying your medical insurance, or is he still paying it for everybody in the company?
It's a small company.
So I'm assuming that... How many is small? Two, five, 50?
No, one.
One?
Yes.
And you're the one?
Yes. Maybe he's paying for himself. I don't know that.
If he's paying, if you're the only one in the company and he's paying for you, then it would be fully deductible. I don't know what he's talking about.
It's deductible for him, you're saying?
It's deductible for the corporation or the business for him to pay your medical insurance if you're the only one in the company that he's paying it for.
Would you know that? So why would my accountant tell me it's not deductible anymore?
Well, if your employer is paying you, and then you buy the insurance, and your employer doesn't have what's called like a Section 125 plan, then the premium you're paying is only deductible if it qualifies for an itemized deduction, and it wouldn't count. But if you can work out a deal with your employer where he pays the premium and it doesn't go through your hands, it would be deductible. I don't know if I'm explaining myself correctly.
Could you say that again? Right now, the check is coming to me, and I pay directly.
Then it's not deductible under that circumstance. Now, if the employer sent the check directly to the insurance company for you as a benefit of the company, of his company, it should be deductible for him. Absolutely.
Under what rule would you know?
Well, I pay for the employees of my company, and it's fully deductible. And there's probably out of 20-some people that work for me, I'd say there's 12 or 14 that take the medical insurance, and there's 10 that don't. And the premium we pay to those people for those people's medical insurance is fully deductible, no doubt.
Maybe I should work for your company.
Yeah, maybe. But you see, Larry, if you had two people in the company and he came to you and he said, Larry, I'm going to pay your medical insurance, but I'm not going to pay Jones' medical insurance, then the premium that he pays for you would not be deductible. But if you're the only employee and he's paying your medical insurance premium, I'm absolutely confident as a CPA that I would take the deduction. So,
because he's paying directly to the insurance company.
Because he would be setting up a medical insurance program for his employees. He wouldn't be discriminating against anybody because you're the only one he could discriminate against. And therefore, it should be deductible for him. Now, I don't know how else it could be. I don't know how else to interpret that.
What is your office number again?
410-823-7283. Matter of fact, there are employers out there that they hire their spouse, let's say my wife Bev, and I was just a sole proprietor, you know, and I hired my wife Bev, and I paid for her medical insurance, that would be fully deductible to me. A lot of small business owners do that. That's a legitimate thing as long as you're not discriminating against people in the plan. That's the key. All right, Larry.
Thank you.
Bye. Dave in Dundalk, how can we help you?
Yes, well, I hope you can. I was kicked out of the house, you know, this house here.
Ask you a quick question. What do you mean by kicked out? Do you mean like some big guy picked you up and kicked you out, or did the mortgage company kick you out, or
well,
what?
Well, what happened was I had a friend, and I tried to take her under my... And because she had, like, Christian values, and she had a problem with drugs. And then she had a baby, which is not my baby, but... The baby's the light, and everything changed. We don't have that problem anymore. She doesn't do that stuff. But I was kicked out by the city. And I put a certain amount of money in the house.
Whose house is it?
It up. And I felt
whose,
like that.
Whose house is it?
Huh?
Whose house is it?
It's mine.
You own it?
Yes.
Why did the county kick you out?
Well, there was no-nos being done in my house. She had a problem, and she's finally quit the problem, drugs.
Right, I understand.
Drug problem, and but the baby came, and it was like a different world. And I really, I don't hate to say this. I really believe it was a godsend. I really believe God had his hand in this because everything went well. You know, before it was all kinds of stress and everything else, and I wasn't into it because I never liked it in the first place, and she shouldn't have been in it too because she had good family that were ministers and stuff like that,
right.
I thought I should be able to.
Well, whose name's on the house? Is the name solely on the house yours, or is it now jointly?
It was mine, but see, I had a feeling about her because I felt like she would quit because she come from a religious family.
Right, but did you ever put her name on the mortgage with you? I mean, on the title with you?
No.
So the only name on the title is yours.
Yeah.
So how? What premise?
I had two apartments. I rented the top out, and the person who I rented to, he was terrible.
Wait, Dave, stay with me, man. Stay with me. Why did the city say they kicked you out?
Well, because he was coming home using drugs, and there was a lot of...
But you owned the house. Why didn't they kick her out?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I was there. I was living there. See, I was living in the same house. See, it was a two-apartment.
But how can the city kick you out of a house that you own?
Well, I assumed that because they came out, so I left. I left because they came, you know.
Well, but you still own the house, my friend.
Yeah, I still own the house.
So you just need to get yourself a real estate attorney and get possession of the house again.
Okay, but I put $110,000 in to fix it up because I did fix it up.
But it's your house. You can sell the house anytime you want to.
Yeah.
So put the house up for sale and sell it and get the money out of it.
The thing is, the problems aren't here no more. It's like a normal house now.
But
the girl quit.
Are you living there?
Yeah, and she lives downstairs. She lives downstairs. I'm upstairs.
Oh, so what do you want?
I want to know whether I can deduct $110,000 I put in the house to fix it up because, you know.
Are you renting the house?
Yes, but not. You know.
Well, then the answer's no.
Hour a month, you know.
The answer's no. If it's just your personal residence, then it's not deductible. If it was a rental property, then yeah, you could deduct it.
Well, it was a rental property. I was renting.
But it's not rented now, my friend, so there's nothing you can deduct. It's just your personal residence, and you decided to fix it up. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
I'm living here, downstairs.
I understand. Well, I'm glad that everything's worked out.
Yeah,
and so, you know, that's really cool that that's worked out well. And I got to run now, okay?
It was a godsend. Because,
yeah, I agree. And I bless you, my friend,
yeah,
and good
to... tell you the truth, it was... Like, I'd never thought it'd end, but it did, you know. And it ended for the better.
That's
you
good.
Know, no desire for it.
But no deduction, unfortunately, okay? Sorry that disappoints you in that regard, but the better news is the relationship's healed.
Yeah.
Frank in Baltimore, how can we help you?
Hi, Drew.
Hey.
I have a question about treasury bonds.
Go ahead.
Let's say you have a client who's 30 years old. You set up a portfolio for him. And the client calls you up and says, Drew, you know, I got cash in my portfolio along with the investments. I want to buy $50,000 worth of 30-year treasuries. You look over the portfolio. You say, well, that's a reasonable investment for our objectives. I'll go ahead and buy them. And then the client says, but one thing, I think the current yield on 30-year treasuries is around 2.25%.
That's right.
So I'm happy with the 2.25%. They're excludable from state income taxes. But if interest rates go up, I don't want to take a loss on principal. So I want to own the bonds outright or in a unit trust. If I buy them through a bond fund, then if the, you know.
That's true, but keep in mind, 30 years is a long, 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 long time before you're going to get your principal back.
Well, suppose it's like 10-year treasuries. In other words...
Right, that's paying 1.8% right now.
Yeah, the client insists...
You're absolutely right, Frank, is that if you want to eliminate the interest rate risk, you'd want to own the bonds outright as long as you feel you're going to hold them to maturity.
Right. Now, here's my question. How would you, through the financial consulate, actually consummate that purchase? What would you do to buy the bonds for the client?
Well, we do all of our trading through Schwab and TD Ameritrade, and so you just call up and buy bonds. I mean, it's pretty straightforward.
If you were to call up Schwab on behalf of your client and say, hi, this is Drew. I'm for account such and such. I'm going to buy $50,000.
We do it all online nowadays, so we would just put an electronic order in for $100,000, 30-year treasury bonds. We'd pick a 30-year bond that's out there that's trading, and we, you know, or we'd have to wait for a new issue, a new deal to come through, and you trade it.
But you could actually buy that through Schwab as opposed to having to go to the Treasury Direct.
You buy most treasury bonds, you know, bills and notes directly through brokerage firms, not through somebody like Treasury Direct.
I got you.
Treasury Direct is typically dealing with, well, I guess you can buy notes and so forth through Treasury Direct, but most of the time I see Treasury Direct, it's e-bonds and i-bonds and things of that sort.
Uh-huh. So with regard to like a 10-year bond, obviously, Schwab has various bond funds that you can buy.
Yeah, that's true. But,
or ETFs.
But you're right. You want to own the bond individually.
Right. If you want the individual bond, you can buy that through Schwab, just like you can buy a bond fund through them, a mutual fund, or an ETF.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Gotcha.
Absolutely. You know, and you can, you know, I'm pretty sure he can go right to Treasury. We just don't do it, so I don't know. I usually deal with Treasury Direct. I'm dealing with E's and I bonds and so forth. But, yeah, but with brokerage firms, we buy them all the time. Zero coupons, 30 years, 10 years, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm not positive, but I think with Treasury Direct, the kicker is that you're basically putting in a non-competitive bid for a new issue.
Yeah, that's true. I think you're right, and I've had clients that have had accounts with Treasury Direct and owned a lot of notes, but they were typically 1 years and 5 years and things like that. So, you know, again, it's, you know, you can get them through any brokerage, all right?
Are all Treasury bonds now book entry? Is there ever any bond or receipt issued?
No, they don't do. I mean, stocks and everything. Everything's pretty much electronic now, Frank.
Can you get stock certificates if you want them now? Or?
You can under certain circumstances. You nearly have to pay money to get them, but it's not typical anymore.
Okay.
All right, Frank.
Thank you. Good question.
I'm going to get to Joanna when I come back from this pause with Nick Rehak. Take it away, Nick.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth, and we're on an open show. And if you want to call in and be a guest and direct the conversation, 410-922-6680 is the way to do that. And we had a flurry of calls there in that little second part of the show.
Yes,
how
now
are we doing now? We have just Joanna on the line right now. So there's three lines open, 410-922-6680. And we may not even have Joanna because we've been delayed for a little bit, you know. So hopefully she's still there. But if you want to call in, 410-922-6680, and we'll see. Joanna, are you still there?
Yeah, hi, Drew. I hung in there.
There you go. Well, we appreciate that.
Oh, I appreciate talking to you. Listen, Drew, I have about $12,000 worth of stock that I'd like to get rid of, but I don't know how. Now, the problem is I've had it for like 40 years, you know, incrementally, and it's dividend reinvestment and all that stuff, and I just don't want it anymore. I just want to...
What company is it? Do you mind I ask?
BG&E.
So it's Exelon now.
Well, it's Exelon now, yes.
Okay. So you've owned it for 40 years and you've reinvested
it
dividends. Right. You probably have no idea what your cost basis is.
See,
in
that's what my problem is. Now, I was wondering if I can just tell them I want to sell it and take out and ask them to take out any taxes that are due.
Let me ask you an interesting question.
Sure.
Do you happen to, by any chance, be charitably minded? Do you go to church, give money?
Yeah, I do.
You know, do you do $1,000 or so a year, or do you do more?
Yeah, I guess I do charity. I guess maybe $2,000 a year.
I mean, but is there one big charity every year you give $1,000?
No, I give to three separate charities.
And it's like $500 or $600 to each?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
Okay, and is it on a regular basis?
On a regular basis, monthly. I give so much a month.
Monthly, okay. So here's one thing you can do. This is a cool idea. Okay, so what I would do is I'd set up a brokerage account with each of the three, or I'd find out the brokerage account to the three charities that you're giving money to on a regular basis, and I'd figure out how much I'm going to give them on a regular basis. And at the beginning of the year, I say, look, I'm not going to give you money monthly or quarterly anymore. I'm just going to give you a lump sum of stock at the beginning of each year. You do with what you want with it. Now you don't have to worry about the cost basis. All you got to do is give them the stock, take the tax deduction for the full market value of the stock, not report the gain, and you're a winner, and you pocket the cash that you would have given them on the yearly basis, and walk away a winner.
Okay, I could take a tax deduction. Is that
yeah, so saying? Let's say you bought that Exelon stock for, you said you had about $10,000?
Well, yeah, I bought it for maybe like $15, but then again, I reinvested. I bought it for
$100. No, but forget, you say total it's worth about $10,000, right?
About $10,000, $12,000.
Okay, so for the next 5 or 6 years, you're going to play this game, okay? So what you're going to do is, let's say your tax cost basis on that Exelon stock is only $5,000, which means that if you'd sell the full $10,000, you would have to report a capital gain of $5,000. Well, what you're going to do now is you're going to, every year, you're going to give away a couple $1,000s of stock to the three charities, about $500-$600 to each charity in stock every year. And that stock, let's say you give all three, is $2,000 that you only paid $1,000 for. But because you know that stock's worth $2,000, you're just going to take a charitable deduction for $2,000. I'm assuming you itemize your deductions.
I do, yeah.
Okay, so you're going to get a $2,000 deduction. So instead of paying cash out of your pocket, you're taking a $2,000 tax deduction for something you only paid $1,000 for, and you don't have to report that other $1,000 a gain on your taxes, and you don't have to worry about what your cost basis is. And then the $2,000 that you would have given them in cash, you take and you reinvest any way you want to over the next 5 years. And in 5 years, you'll have that money shifted.
I don't have 5 years. I'm 80 years old now.
Well, I think you have at least 15 as young as you sound.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you a question then. Who would do this for me when I do my income taxes, the CPA I go to?
Well, first it would be the charities. You got to get your brokerage account set up with the charities, okay?
Well, who sets up a brokerage?
Well, they have it set up.
Oh, they
so,
do.
Like
okay,
Chris,
they do that.
Chris here used to be a pastor at a church up in Bel Air, and so they had a brokerage account, and any of their attendees, what do you call attendees?
Depends on where they could be church members or
church
members. Parishioners,
the
depending on
parishioners,
which,
church members.
Yeah, on which flavor you go to.
And they give, instead of giving them cash, they would just give them stock. And
so I would just call the charity, like the Helping Up Mission. So
yeah, right. We've
I
given to
give
them
$2,000 a year.
Yeah. Absolutely. And they'll, you say to them, I want to know where you take charitable stock gifts. And they'll say, well, we have an account at Merrill Lynch, or we have an account at Schwab. And you say, okay, give me the Schwab account number and so forth. And then you go to, wherever your Exelon stock is. And you just have it transferred from your account over to their account.
It's a regular transfer.
Yeah, it's a regular transfer. It's very easily done.
Yeah.
Anybody who's holding your stock, I'm going to assume it's being held by the transfer agent of Exelon. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
You'd have to talk to them and ask them what are their roles to transfer stock to whoever the brokerage firm is for the.
First, I'll start with the charity, and then I'll start with them and ask them how I transfer.
Yeah, well, but that's
it's like an albatross around my neck. I don't know how to get rid of this.
Yeah, but you know, now the other side of the coin is that if you hold that Exelon stock until the day that you pass on. In this world, all the capital gain is wiped out to your heirs unless our beloved president gets his way that he talked about last night where he would wipe that out, called the step up in cost basis for stock.
Yeah. So, well, suppose I just wanted the money.
Suppose you just want the money right now.
Yeah,
you would just call up. you just call up the transfer agent for Exelon where the stock is, and you say to them, sell all my stock, send me a check, and then at the end of the year you have to report on your tax returns what you think your basis is and what you think your gain is, and you're going to pay, what do you think your overall income is at the end of the year, $10,000, $50,000, $100,000?
For mine?
Yeah.
$30,000.
She actually could be tax-free, couldn't she? She'd be in the 10 to...
now, actually.
Well, I understand, but her capital gains are 0% tax to somebody in the 10 to 15% tax bracket. So.
Especially if some of that, a good portion of that is Social Security income.
I'm doing all kinds of fancy tax planning.
I was going to get to that at the end.
You're going to get to that. You know, Joanna, if you're in... You might be able to sell your stock, Joanna, at 100% tax-free because you're in a low enough income tax bracket.
Okay. Now, can I ask the company to withhold tax for me before they give me?
You don't need to have any tax withheld. If you're in that income bracket,
really, other than Social Security, it's like
if you're in that income tax bracket,
she said. So it's 15,000. Besides Social Security, it's just 15,000.
12,000
actually. Yeah, 12,000.
So she's definitely there. So you're going to pay no capital gains tax.
So then I can just sell it.
You can just sell it.
Sell the puppy.
But I had a great time explaining the charitable concept.
It was good. It had to do with people out there.
That. I definitely
but you don't need to
I
do the
charity each year.
You don't need to do the charity thing. Actually, it would be a detriment to her to do the charity thing. I'm trying to think. Would it? It'd probably be a break even.
Now you're introducing.
I wouldn't need that to
if you spread that over time, now you're introducing the volatility of the stock and.
Yeah. So I would just sell it
and I won't be taxed.
Yeah, because you're in the 15% or lower bracket. Any capital gains to people in those brackets is 0% tax, okay?
Okay. But, I can't thank you enough, Drew.
But it was
really
fun.
It made me understand it.
Well, I appreciate that, Joanna. God bless. Take care.
God bless also.
Bye.
See, and I was going to say, based on what you said, is this a great country or what? Based on what you were doing, it was great stuff.
Scott Larimore on the Weather Channel.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're going to Sally. Does that say Sally there? Sally. Thank you, Noah. Sally, how can we help you?
Okay, I got a question about cost basis when it comes to selling a stock. But suppose I bought a stock and I kept it a while and I joined a dividend reinvestment plan, and I know that's part of the cost basis. But before I sell it, the company is acquired by, let's say, Company B. So I get shares in Company B. I join their DRIP plan. And maybe down the line it happens a third time. How do I figure out what the total cost basis is when I sell the stock, when I finally sell that stock?
So your cost basis is the amount of money you originally pay for the stock plus all dividend reinvestments minus any stock that you sold along the way minus the percentage of the basis that you sold along the way. But it doesn't sound like you've ever sold any basis along the way.
That's right.
So you just go to your original amount you paid for the original stock you bought. So let's say you buy Company A for $1,000 and you reinvest $100 of dividends. Now you have $1,100 and Company B comes in and buys you out for $2,000. All right. So now you have $1,100 of cost basis in Company B. And then you reinvest another $100, so now you have $1,200 in, but Company C comes along and buys you, and now it's worth $3,000, but your cost basis is still $1,200.
So it all goes back to the original...
Anything that you put into the original company plus any dividend reinvestment in any of the companies that you either bought or dividend reinvested. Now here's the tricky part. Let's say Company B came in and gave you 0.5 shares of stock for every one share you had plus $5 in cash. That's when it gets really complicated.
Sure. Yeah, I can imagine.
But, you know, it doesn't sound like you ever had any of that. Is that correct? Every time somebody took over your stock, they just gave you their stock. Is that correct?
Yeah, in one case, they gave me a so-called cash payment, which was not taxable. they called it whatever they call it, principal? Not taxable, and they gave me so many shares.
So what you would have to do is you go back to Company A that you originally bought and figure out what your cost basis is, and then what happens is when the new company takes over, whatever their reorganization, whatever their acquisition deal is, they have a formula out there how much of it would be reportable as taxable and how much is tax deferred and what allocation of bases goes to one part versus another part. And then you, if you did reinvestment again, that gets added into your bases. So, you know, somebody would just have to do that, that little bit of homework from Company A to Company B, even to Company C, if that happened. You know, so it's not difficult. Did you always have this stock in a brokerage account, or did you always have it with the transfer agent?
Brokerage account, T. Rowe Price.
Was it always been at T. Rowe Price?
Yep.
If it's always been at T. Rowe Price, T. Rowe Price should have the cost basis for you if you ask for it.
I think I will. I didn't think of that.
If the stock has only, when you purchased it, you purchased it through T. Rowe Price, and when it got acquired either one time or two times, and it was with T. Rowe Price, T. Rowe Price will have the cost basis if you ask them to give it to you.
That's good. I have one other short question.
Go ahead.
On the Roth IRA, when you've had it more than 5 years, anything you take out is tax-free, but do they still issue a 1099?
Yes, they do issue a 1099, but it's the code on that 1099 that's most important. I believe the code for a Roth qualified distribution is code J, isn't it? Yeah, you know, I'm gonna go with that.
Go with that.
I'm gonna go with that. Code J, and if it's a qualified Roth distribution code J, it would be tax-free.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's the key, is what is the code, box 7, and that code tells you whether it's a qualified Roth distribution. If it is, then it's a tax-free distribution. If it's not, it just means you have to report what you think is the taxable portion, if there are any penalties are involved and so forth, okay?
Yeah, fine. Thanks
all right,
a lot.
Solly. Thank you. You find that out for me, Chris, and see if I'm right. I think it's code J. But anyway, I never answered the American Opportunity Credit. So
sure.
Let's
go for it. Because we did the one part already.
Yep,
you
got kids and you're a business owner. You hire them. So what if you don't a business owner? So, and I've got high income. So what I do is I don't claim the children on my own tax return if I'm in the alternative minimum tax, which most people who aren't qualified for the AMT are in the alternative minimum tax. So I don't claim them on my return. The children don't report them on their return, so they don't take them on their own tax return. But then what I do is I give my children appreciated stock, and I let the children sell that stock in their own brokerage account under their own Social Security number. That capital gain then goes to children, and I can wipe out about $15,000 to $20,000 in capital gains using the American Opportunity Credit, even if they are subject to the kiddie tax. Anyway, it is cool stuff. I love cutting taxes. I love minimizing taxes for clients. Nothing delights me more than cutting taxes for our clients. Anyway,
yeah,
we're finished.
Wow.
Did you find out the code?
That fast. No.
No. It's code J. I think it's code J. Next week, you tell me if I'm right or wrong.
We'll do.
Anyway, this
sounds
is
good.
Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.